Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. Bill Russell is here with me and with Janosch Starker. The subject is beauty.
In the eye of the beholder.
Am I supposed to stop at that?
Forgive me, but the last sentence when I said that, suddenly realized there might be somebody around the ether who may think that when I talk about this excessive facial contortions and all kinds of tricks that some of my younger colleagues are doing, that I'm frustrated. And I don't think that I ever met any musician in my kind of level of achievement who's as little frustrated as I am.
How is that?
Because I have reached much more than I ever wanted, so which means that I view these things simply as a teacher much more than as a performer, because I never believed that anybody else who plays a concert, it means that I have less concerts, because I have more concerts in my life than I ever wanted. And I have hundreds of students around the world who serve the cause, as I call it. And I even tell them to carry the flag where music matters. And if you do it well, you will get recognition. If you do it well, you will be able to make a decent living. Sometimes you even get rich with it. But the cause is to bring beauty and decency, purity, simplicity in music for those who perceive it, and try to increase the number of those who perceive it.
Well, that is precisely where I want it to be, because I have carried through the last 25 years this wonderful phrase that you actually amplified in the course of time. So you too continue to grow and change and inform us in different ways. Balance, purity, and simplicity was how you phrased it when first we met, having a similar conversation many years ago. And I have found that balance, purity, and simplicity applies across a great range of experiences. And then, some years later, you said, oh, and we must add discipline. Well, I didn't like that part nearly as much.
Well,
but the framing of that is really very useful.
I was lax in the first conversation, because that's where it starts, with discipline. And since you've heard me say that music is one of the classic disciplines, so therefore it starts with discipline. It's not superimposed. It's supposed to start with discipline so as to allow yourself the freedom. Because the only reason why some people misunderstand that I'm putting a great deal of emphasis on technique. But why? Because if you liberate yourself from the technical problems, then you can express yourself freely. I cannot accept that somebody expresses themselves and playing out of tune. That I cannot understand. Or somebody playing wrong rhythms and wrong dynamics and everything. Then the great human thoughts behind it is just not applicable to the profession that I'm in.
Well, and in some sense, they are expressing themselves. They're saying they don't care.
They don't know any better.
That their perspective is more important.
There's an important aspect to this whole question, what we talked about before and still talking about it, that many times I tell my students that once you are on stage and people came in and paid tickets to hear you, and you are not in condition to really give the best of yourself, then put on a show, because the people has to get their money's worth. That's something else.
So if you're not feeling real well that night, you might
then just force yourself, generate as much excitement as you can, and perspire,
and know how to do that,
and
presumably
perspire, because then the people really feel the.
Well, that goes to the in a sense the complexity of the notion of a performance. Because a performance is a very complex notion. In one sense, in sort of the purity, a pure sense, the performance is the artist as the intermediary between the composer, in the case of music, the composer and the audience.
If he reaches a high point, then he becomes a recreative artist.
Right.
Basically, the performing arts is to bring the message of the composer to the public. But mind you, there are all kinds of sides to this question. Obviously, we're not going to cover all of them. But not too long ago, I've read a very extensive article in the New York Times about the importance of playing without music or with music. According to the views of the writer, music is in between the audience and the performer.
Yeah, you mean the physical piece of paper.
There is something, a music stand and so on. And it's one of the worst nonsenses I ever confront.
You mean you disagree,
with.
Huh?
Totally, because I played all my life with music, without music. Now, as I'm old, I'm playing with music most of the time. The things that I all my life played without music, and it's not to just to avoid mishaps or memory lapses or so on, because this is what the writer is believing. One of my favorite sort of anecdotes is that after a concert when I was in the Chicago Symphony, principal cellist with Fritz Reiner, who I consider, as you well know, the greatest conductor of the 20th century, not the greatest performer, but the greatest conductor, was conducting Beethoven's Eroica Symphony with music. At the time, he could, without music, score the entire 9 Beethoven symphonies of Beethoven and the 4 symphonies of Brahms and Stravinsky and Wagner, everything else. And he rehearsed without music, and in the concert he put on the music. And after the concert I asked him, why? And he looked at me and said, my thoughts were all different because it relates to a number of other anecdotes. But what he finally said, if I look at the music, I get new ideas. And that became the guiding principle in my life, that when you play Beethoven sonatas or certain concertos hundreds of times in your life,
it's
and you
no
sit
longer
on stage and you look at the music, you get constantly new ideas.
Rather than doing it by rote.
That is a remarkable, I mean, what you're describing is a within a very constrained freedom, improvisation inside the score, and it goes to those boundaries you were talking about.
Improvisation is again another subject that people don't improvise truly. They prepare for improvisation, but they have choices. So, which means that you choose, and if you have the music in front of you, you have a much wider choice.
And in no way does that violate the integrity of the freedom that the original composer offered you. It's a collaborative effort.
That,
then
that comes again within the parameter of the musical laws.
Yeah.
That just because you look at the music and you see, oh, this phrase coming up and it's so gorgeous, I'm going to love it. That can lead into disasters. Let alone the fact is that the conductor is conducting, and if the conductor doesn't know what the heck you, which one you're choosing, which is out of the context of the parameter, in that moment you have trouble playing together with the orchestra.
It always amazes me when an orchestra does play together beautifully, that you can have that many people with that many ideas doing one thing.
It's not as complicated as it seems. It simply depends on that. First of all, the conductor is the one who is the unifying force of the 100 people or 80 people, as many as they are in the orchestra. However, if the conductor doesn't speak the same musical language as you do, you're not going to play together. You may play, start
together.
This
is spoken as a true touring international primo cellist.
It just happened to me 3 days ago that I was playing with an orchestra in the West Coast and found a man with whom I never played. It was one of the best performances of the most famous war horse at Dvorak Concerto, simply because the man spoke, but had the capacity to speaking the same musical language. So therefore, it didn't have to be a great deal of rehearsals. He just simply felt similarly to me, so all I had to do is lift up my head, and he understood.
This business about language has so many levels and dimensions, and I think sometimes...
By the way, don't misunderstand, the language is not French, German, Russian, Hungarian, or whatnot. It's Bach's language, Brahms' language, Beethoven's language, and so on.
Within the broader context of the musical language and within the context of these of the people who get it, when you start, and I assume that's a lot of what the education is, a lot of what you spend your time is, you know, taking this broad definition, this broad sort of understanding and bringing it down so it doesn't eliminate variety, but it does constrain it to what is appropriate to...
This is what the teacher's job is, not the coach's job, but the teacher's job, to enlighten the growing musical minds that what is Beethoven's language and what is Mozart's language and Brahms and so on. And one doesn't learn that because of the repertory of playing Beethoven cello sonatas or Brahms violin concertos. You have to play and be familiar with the output of a composer, that you will understand Mozart, how to play a Mozart sonata, by knowing his operas.
And it's not a dead language. I think that's part of what confuses. I mean, the idea that it was written 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, said all we're doing is recreating an archaic story, an old story. It's a dead language, and it's not. It's like saying English is a dead language, and that I can't say anything new today.
Yep. The language, I repeat it, is the composer's language, and therefore, but it. It's a troublesome subject you are touching upon, because it comes back comes to the issue that is a favorite topic of today's musical world, of the Baroque music, and to play music with the Baroque times instruments and with the pitch of those. Music is an evolutionary process, which means we are not supposed to play Mozart in the 20th century the same way as we play Brahms or Schumann, but we have to play it as music is understood in the 20th century, with the differentiations of those composers, but based on their output, but through our experiences. Which means when the question comes up that, what do I think about the playing Bach as in Bach's time it was played? I have no intention of playing Bach as Bach's time was played. My intention is to play Bach as I conceive of it in the 20th century.
And for which you got a Grammy in the very recent past, so that other people apparently...
I was stunned and startled.
Other people obviously agree with that.
But
this
of course
is
you understand that 50 years prior to that Grammy, I got the Grand Prix du Disque in Europe, and I'm expecting 50 years from now to get another one.
And I'm expecting it for you. This is Janos Starker, a world-famous cellist and teacher, equally renowned. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, are here with him in Bloomington, Indiana, and we're all going to be back in just a moment.